I ended up helping my dad for a few years. So I turned down all of them, job offers. And then I ended up going into environmental consultancy. So that's what my dad does. So I was in that for a few years. And then I decided to get married and move to Iran. So that's basically what happened to me.
What's going on? Welcome back. If you haven't checked out part one of this conversation, then I highly advise that you do so, because I got to explore some of Saba's early memories of what it was like to grow up as a British Iranian. And as she described it, there were certain silent struggles that she wished she had access to know other people that were going through similar things. But this didn't take away from the fact that she knew she had a very privileged upbringing and great parents who supported her in our ambitions. We also talk about the history of Iran, which I find really fascinating, and it's a shame that it doesn't get spoken about more in society and in the education system. So definitely check it out. Let me know what you think. And now we get into the next huge chapter that occurred in Saba's life.
Was that a complete surprise even for you, or...
still is a surprise. I still can't believe I'm here after being here for like 6 years.
And how has that been for you in terms of, if you were to self-reflect on how it's maybe changed or enhanced or adapted you as a person, you know, how would you compare the Saba of maybe, you know, 10 or 6 years ago to now?
Oh God, that's a difficult question.
I thought I'd throw that one in there for you.
Yeah, that is a really difficult question. Well, it's definitely made me a lot stronger. I'm glad, even though it was a big risk moving here, because unlike a lot of other Iranians, I'd never been to Iran. So I went when I was like 5 or 6, and then because like of when we had like summer holidays and stuff, my mum and my dad never wanted me to come here because it was too hot, and then we had to cover up, and my mum was like, she's gonna, like, the kids are gonna hate it, like, let them go when they're older. So I'd never been to Iran. Coming here was definitely a cultural shock, and it was weird because obviously I'm Iranian and it's like my whole life I was growing up being Iranian and not looking like everybody else. And then I'd move to a country where I look like everyone else, but yeah, I still don't fit in. I'm still so different to everyone else. And it was like literally going through everything I'd gone through childhood again, moving out here, but a bit different. And yeah, like, it's definitely made me stronger. 18 years of challenges of growing up. And then finally getting to a point where I felt, okay, now I'm content with like who I am and my identity and whatever. I got to that stage a lot quicker. Like, I'm so proud of being
That's different. Amazing.
And I think it's all them skills that I learned growing up.
Do you think it is for everyone? I know this might be a difficult question, but having lived both sides of it and having made that move, you know, if someone is struggling to either connect with their culture or identity, but they want to, would you suggest what you've done as a way of being able to make yourself stronger and more relatable to it? You know, to go back to the country of your grandparents or parents and like really live those traditions or just live that culture a bit more?
Definitely. It helps. It doesn't, for some people, it might not help. But for me, it did help.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a difficult question. Some people can come here and still feel like, oh my God, like, I don't relate to any of this. And I think the key is just kind of to embrace it rather than try to relate to it or attach to it.
Almost a bit as if you are like a traveler going to a place that you're just interested by, right? And then embrace that culture
definitely.
And then see if you can fit in with it after.
Yeah, and there's parts that you like, but sometimes when you travel, there's parts that you don't like. There's parts that you can kind of take into your life, and there's parts where you think, I'm definitely with them, like, grow up. And it's just having that skill of being able to do that. And I think growing up as a third culture kid, you learn that quickly because you learn, okay, I like this about my culture. I don't like this about my culture. I like this about the English culture. I don't like this. And you learn to just kind of pick and choose of the things that you like and the things that you want to attach to your identity. And the things that you don't like, being able to have that skill really helped me living here. And it wasn't easy. It definitely wasn't easy because the culture, Iranian culture, is so diverse. It is hard. Like here, like nobody really thinks and then speaks. I just kind of speak.
Yeah.
People have called me fat.
Wow.
You look depressed. Like, why have you put on so much weight? I've even had like, oh, congratulations, you're pregnant. And I'm like, no, oh, just put on some weight.
Oh my God.
I'm not.
No, nowhere near.
Even working here is like so hard because there's not meritocracy here. Doesn't really exist. So like people are in positions because of like who they know rather than what they know. And then you go into meetings and stuff and you're talking to people and it's like the marketing manager giving you like financial advice. And it's like, well, what do you know about finance? Like you haven't even studied finance. And then you realize like he hasn't even studied marketing, but he's like sitting at the top.
Yeah.
Because of his like uncle.
That's crazy.
So like learning to like adapt this culture is still tough. But like I said, definitely 100% as a third culture kid, learning all them things has helped me. Because like the hardships, I'm just like, doesn't affect me as
much. This is what I really like, because you are firstly straight away identified your privileges, right? And you touched on how that's been a motivator for you to do what you're doing, right? And not the struggles. And both work, but you know, the fact that you've even recognized your privileges is amazing to hear.
Yeah.
But then also what you've done with what you saw as the struggles and the things you had to work through and the hurdles you had to jump through, how that's helped you so many years later. So it's not even, you know, the issue with the words third culture kid is you hear kid and you think it's just about, you know, at whatever age you count as being a kid, whereas someone can be a third culture kid, and that's why some people say third culture individual,
yeah,
at any age. All right, so you know, you moving there in your 20s or 30s, you're still a third culture kid because you're the kid of your parents, but also you're a third culture individual because you are throwing yourself into a different culture to the one you're raised in, or the different culture to the one of your
parents.
Definitely. And there's always something you can learn, even if you've done it a few times before.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely. Third culture individual. Doing it all again.
Yeah. And what type of people did you find that you were connecting with, and, you know, who are your friends out there? Are they mainly locals or, you know, other third culture individuals?
It's a mix, and I'm happy it's a mix. So it's people that were like born and raised here. I have very, very, very religious friends. I have friends that don't even believe in Islam. When I first moved out here, about a year later, they released the sanctions. So a lot of my Iranian community from London, like our friends, all of a sudden moved back. And it was amazing. And the sanctions happened again, never really left.
Oh, wow.
it's a mix here. And the thing is here, social life is a big thing here, even though we have a one-day weekend where we only have Fridays off. But during the week and weekends, everybody makes an effort to see each other. And I love that, because in the UK, it was very work-based, like, your career comes first, social life happens, but you kind of plan it.
Very touch and go.
And it is very touch and go, whereas here it's like social life is so important.
Mm.
Like, tonight I can ring my friends and I'll be like, do you want to come like around and watch football? And like all of a sudden like 10 people will be here. Obviously not because of coronavirus, but before coronavirus, people would say, okay, let's just go like the north of Iran. You'd ring a few people up and then you'd end up being like 15, 20 people all of a sudden, like having a road trip. Because it's so important for people. Like, I feel like even though the economic struggle is so much more here, balance in life, you see more than I did in the UK.
Wow, yeah.
Which is crazy. And even with the poor people, like people who don't have that much money, you drive along the roads in Iran and you see families having picnics next to the motorway, having the time of their life. They bring their shisha, they bring their kebabs, And it's like with very, very minimal, like they have a blast and they do it and they make sure like they all gather together and you see them laughing and joking. And it's like, oh my God, like this is amazing. Like with so little, they like find a way to enjoy their lives.
That's fascinating. And it, what it sounds like is, and tell me if I'm wrong, that community is a huge thing there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, for my parents' generation, they're Indians, but they grew up in Africa. So in season one, I kind of interviewed my family members about that experience of being Indians in Africa and then moving to the UK. And he's like, the community there was everything. Like, yeah. Not even just a part of really important, it was everything. So first, their family, and then anyone who was
so nice.
Another Ugandan Indian, Ugandan Asian, religious differences didn't matter. So my grandparents, who were very strict, like Indians, very strict vegetarians, on Eid, the Islamic families that they were close to would come round and bring food, but it would be very strict to what my grandparents' cultural diet was. So vegetarian, you know, no meat, no eggs, none of that. And even the other way around, like when it was our Diwali, they would take sweets and make sure that there was nothing in it and it was halal and everything. So they said it was only really when they came to the UK when you started to notice that, well, we're actually Indian and you're from Pakistan or you're from Sri Lanka or Bangladesh or whatever. But in Africa, they were just all like, yeah, we are Ugandan Asians and we stick together. Yeah. And the community was huge. Yeah.
Oh, that's so nice. No, it's the same. Community here is a big thing. Even though we all mix together, so the Armenian Christians mix with the Muslims, mix with maybe not so much the Jews, but we have a huge Jewish community in Iran. I think we have 106 synagogues in Iran. Yeah, so it's a big community, and community here is like when we have holidays, everybody goes to see their families, and it's part even of the, we have Iranian New Year, it's part of our culture where the younger people go to visit the elders, and it's really nice. I love that part of the Iranian culture. I think moving out here, I really got to embrace it.
That's so nice. And so what's next in terms of in the next few years, 5 to 10 years? Like, is your plan to remain there for the long term? And secondly, if it's not, is it that you have this, you know, I want to achieve this ambition before I even think about the next step?
I've kind of learned to just like take things week by week, month by month, rather than think too long term, because when you live in a developing country, it's quite difficult to live. There's so many things happening. And like I said, we've got sanctions again now, like ridiculous amounts of inflation. Like I've experienced 2 earthquakes while being out here.
Wow.
I don't really know what the future holds. I'd love to say I would like to stay here for a much longer period, because I feel like being here and working here has an impact. Like I'm really, and even though our family business was environmental consultancy, it was impacting the environment in a good way. The impact of working in the third world country is completely different. Like you see change, like you can make change, and that's crazy. So I would like to say that I'll be here for longer, up until I can try to make
even
a little bit of change. but you just don't know. If an earthquake happens and like my house falls down, I'll probably end up moving back. So
well, touch wood, it doesn't happen in that way. Yeah, I mean, if you come back, that would be amazing. But I know I love what you've said, and to be honest, it doesn't surprise me from, like I say, from what I did know of you and the time we did spend together, like the fact that you think like this and want to achieve these kind of things. And I just hope that, you know, people who do listen to this conversation, it's not about, you know, I always try not to make this like another self-help podcast or like, here's how to do and here's, you know, the bullet points of what you should do. But it's just like, hey, here's a relatable story. And exactly like you've said it, right? You know, even when I asked you the question of, do you think this is for everyone? And you said, I don't know, but this is what it was like for me. That's why I want people to hear, right? I want people to hear what was your experience? Can they relate to it and do they agree? And, you know, I think there's a lot of inspiration in what you've said for why you're out there and what you hope to do. So I think you'll do really well. And I hope other people are inspired.
Oh, that's so sweet. Thank you.
Well, thank you for sharing. And before we go into the final five, is there anything else you'd like to discuss or mention?
I don't think so. I think we've pretty much covered everything.
Then I've done my
job. I think a lot of my friends, even who live here, if they listen to this, they're going to be like, oh my God, did you know you went to performing arts college?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Said too much, I think.
But that's the thing, you don't, and this is what I found out ever since I interviewed my family, it's like some of these conversations, even though you live, like I live with like my dad, and there's so much stuff that he said that I had no idea about, and he's a storyteller, like if anyone who knows him will know that he loves telling stories, and there's still so much that I learned through this 1 or 2 hours sitting with him. It's not that common to sit down and just be asked about literally your whole history of what happened at what points in your life and why did that happen, and how has that reflected on where you've got to today, right? It doesn't really happen. Yeah. And then these kind of conversations bring that out, and hopefully it gets you to remember, like, oh yeah, I did this and this is why I'm like this, you know.
Yeah, no, it's true. It was a real self-reflection for me. You said, I wanted this like talk to be really organic, and just like thinking back of like,
yeah,
where I was, what happened, where I am now is absolutely crazy.
It's amazing.
I didn't expect. I remember my mum telling me, okay, you need to learn the language. You need to learn Farsi. And I think I was like, what, 13? And I was like, mum, really? Like, I need to learn Farsi? Like, when am I ever going to use Farsi?
Yeah.
My sister, bless her, like, she actually went to Iranian school on the weekends, but I refused. I was like, I'm not going to Iranian school. I was like, I'd rather learn, like, German or Spanish or a language that, like, I can work with in the future. Like, I had no idea, like, I'd be moving out here and then going to school here and learning the language at like in my 20s. So, but yeah, you never know what's around the corner, like what your destiny can hold and who you're going to fall in love with. And yeah, you're just like, I literally had no idea, but I have absolutely no regrets. So. For now, touch wood.
I love that. That's such a. I love that note to finish on. I think it sums up, it rounds off our conversation so well that is kind of one of the main takeaways, right? That you don't know what's around the corner. You don't know who you're going to fall in love with. But the fact is, you've gone through that, and then you've embraced where it's taken you.
Yeah.
But above all that, it's really the cherry on top that you have no regrets. So that makes me happy to hear.
Well, that is the journey, right? So
exactly.
I mean, it's about trying to enjoy the journey of whatever life brings, the ups, the downs, the challenges, the hardships, and it's forever going. Like, I don't think there's ever an end point or an ever over it. Yeah, it never stops, and it's just trying to dance with it.
Yeah.
That's how
dance with the journey.
It. Yeah,
that could be
literally.
The title of this episode.
That's what I'm trying to do.
So for this final five, what I would like to do is, when I ask the question, you have to answer it in Farsi.
In Farsi? Okay, wait, I need to, like, change my mind.
No, I'm joking.
Okay, thank God.
You're like, oh, if you want.
Yeah.
But again, I love that you actually embraced that. Like, you weren't like, no, you're like, oh, okay, let me just, like, I'm like, wow, I rate that a lot. You could do a Farsi translation of this episode if you want.
Yeah, maybe.
Love that. Okay, so question one. If you were not in the room and your friends were describing you to a new person, what's the first thing they'd say about you?
I hope, kind, caring, and down to earth, and somebody who likes a challenge. They're the things I hope. I don't know if they would say that, but hopefully they
They better say that.
Yeah, they better say that.
And question two, finish this sentence. Expectation means
finding your true purpose in life. I think that's what expectation means. I think we get it mixed up with what the society expects of you, which I think is wrong.
Mm.
I think it needs to be what gives you real purpose.
Yeah.
And then building your expectations on that, which is super duper hard. I mean, I still haven't found the right expectations. I don't know.
Yeah, I like that. So what I take from that, the expectation really should be from that inside out, right? So like you're saying, like find that inside purpose and then figure out what you expect of yourself from that, yeah, rather than the outside in, which probably is more common from society, which is like, okay, me being this kid who's grown up in XYZ, let's say London, for example, the expectation based on what's going on around me and, you know, what's drilled in us through schools is go to uni, meet people, meet a person. Yeah. And then you take that outside expectation and then you're trying to figure out inside, what do I now do to meet that expectation?
Yeah.
Whereas you flipped it and been like, actually, before we've even figured out internally what our purpose is, we can't set our own expectation on ourselves.
And I think trying to detach expectation from society and what society expects of you, and it's kind of what you expect from yourself, I think that's like a constant struggle that I see in a lot of my friends, myself, my sister, my family, that we're just kind of constantly like fighting for an expectation that it's something that doesn't even really make us happy.
Yeah.
Because it's not, it doesn't even give us purpose. It's just what we think should be right, but is it really right?
Yeah, because it's what most people are telling us.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing. I love that. Love that a lot. And question three, if you could leave one message with the future generations of your family that even in centuries from now, they'll be able to hear what you've said, what would it be?
Having a gratitude diary.
Yeah.
Is essential. Yeah. Something I started in coronavirus, and it was thanks to Shuel, actually.
Oh, yeah, yeah. His 6-minute journal.
Yeah. Because, you know, he always posts about it. And I was like, you know what? Coronavirus is the best time. So much time on my hands. Let me just figure that, try this out. Oh my God. It was like the best thing I'd ever got into the habit of. It's affected me so much that even like my husband is like, oh, like, I don't think you've written your diary today. Like, you're having a bad day. Like, it affects my mood. It's like, it is. That's something I would say to the future generation, because it teaches you to like be grateful. And you kind of eventually find a happiness with the little things in life. And I think that really helps the journey of the ups and the downs. If you can, on a day-to-day basis, even on your worst days, find things that you are grateful for and find things that make you feel happy to be alive, it helps with wherever you're going. So, or whatever you want to achieve, or wherever you're... So thanks to Shuel, he's going to be happy that he's in the podcast.
Oh, he is going to be thrilled.
Yeah. So
just as a little spoiler alert, guess who's on the episode after you?
Shuel.
It is that man himself. So, yeah. And I'm sure we'll cover that side of it, because like you say, crazy. You post about it every day. It's clearly become a big part of his life. So, and I think it's really good because... Yeah. Even when you listen to CEOs and successful people, and you know, that's all over Instagram, that's all over social media, you know, how, you know, all of these, like, how to be successful, how to find your most content self and be satisfied. And there's loads of different things you hear. Like, some people are like, get up at 5 is the most productive time. Others are like, no, sleep in until you feel ready, and then whatever your circadian rhythm is, do that. But one thing that tends to be a constant is this gratitude log, or, you know, wake up and think of the 3 things that happy about. Or I've heard one lady talk about in the morning, she writes in lipstick on a mirror what she's grateful for. It all comes back to this one constant that I've always heard be said, which is what you're saying, that this gratitude log or journal or diary really, really does help make people's day so much better.
It does. Do you know what it is? You think about it. That is the key. Like, even if you don't write about it, because you get into a habit of thinking about it every day. When you have a bad day, because everybody has a bad day, your mind automatically thinks about it, and it just kind of gives you that positive energy that, okay, you know what, everything's going to be all right. And I think, like, I wish I did it earlier, but thanks to Shuel, so he's going to love that.
Yeah, he will. And yeah, thank you for sharing that. And question 4, with the development of tech and media, are we now more fortunate than we were before it existed?
This is a hard question because it depends on what context you look at it. Like, I think, yes, in terms of like this whole coronavirus and lockdown and staying at home has shown all of us like how important tech is, like having to managing to like catch up with friends, family, especially with me, like moving to Iran, if I didn't have video call, like no way could I have even lived here, not being able to like stay in contact with all my family in the UK. Access to information, like Google anything, you've just got the answer, like your phone, like so much good that's come out of technology, helping the environment, X, Y, Z. But there is a lot of bad as well. Like social media pressure, addiction to like Instagram and like these filters are awful. These new Instagram filters, like what is that doing to like children's minds? Like sometimes yeah. I look at them and I'm like, oh my God, this is just not me. Like who is this person?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like actually I was reading something someone like posted about Superwoman syndrome, which is like come from Instagram and like social media, this idea of like being Superwoman, like having an amazing career, having an amazing relationship, traveling the world, like you've got that constant pressure, and even whether you know it or not, conscious, unconscious, it is really hard that this new generation of just trying to like zone out and okay, this is my life. Just trying to get rid of all them social things. Like technology has had a huge influence. I don't know if you've seen that documentary, The Great Hack.
No, someone mentioned it yesterday, I think. I don't know where. But yeah, no, I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's basically all about AI and Cambridge Analytica and like the effect like technology has had on who we vote for. Like advertising,
yeah.
it's scary, it's so scary. But watch it, it's a great documentary, The Great Hack. Honestly, it depends on what context you look at it. So yes and no.
Interesting that you mentioned Great Hack, because I mentioned it on, I think it was the previous episode or the one before, a documentary called The Creepy Line, and it's really similar to what you've described, but it just talks about the journey of Google from wanting to be firstly the world library to then wanting to be the source of every piece of knowledge. And then the next step, which it's kind of got into now, which is, you know, the SEO algorithms and, you know, ranking first on Google. It's not as simple as just the algorithms you think, but, you know, there is this, do they have control over what someone sees on that first page? Because as humans, we just take, I think the stat was, I really want to find out because I keep trying to quote it and I never know the exact number, but I think it's like 89% of people never go past the first page of Google, right? We just take what we see on page one as the most valid, important, legitimate, significant responses to whatever we've searched for. But what if, you know, there is a certain level of control that if you've typed in, who should I vote for in the next Iranian election or something like that, what you're going to see on the first page, you are going to be like, okay, yeah, this makes sense. This is right because I've searched it and this is what's come up. But it could be someone controlling those responses.
The creepy line, I'm definitely going to check it out.
Yeah. And the final question, what one value from ancient Persia do you think the world could benefit with either implementing or focusing on more today?
I would probably say it's from the like Zoroastrians, which was the religion before Islam took over, which was the main religion of Iran when it was the Persian Empire, which is they have a really, really nice motto, which is good deeds, good words, good thoughts. And I love that.
Yeah, because they all align, right?
Yeah, they're all aligned. They all influence each other. So they say if something's not right, fix one of these. And then the rest will come.
Yeah, it's true, because maybe this is my own like critical perception in a way, but you get people who on the surface do a lot of great stuff, right? They give to charity, but then in their language and the way they speak, they'll curse people they don't know, or they're a bit like negative about the way society is going, or they're just a bit rude.
Yeah.
But even though they do all these nice things, and then so you're kind of like, is this person nice or are they not? And I think what you said is good, because it's kind of like, well, you kind of need them all aligned to really genuinely either be content or satisfied or
yeah.
or good.
And like you said, like if you fix one of them, they all, like if somebody's thinking that way, if they think better, it might help them to do a better deed.
Yeah.
Correct one, it will affect the rest.
I love that. Correct one, it will affect the rest. I like that.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much. That was another powerful message to end on. So there's plenty of really, really good points that you've covered.
Aww.
Gems, as some people call it. So I really hope that the listener is thinking, wow, I'm really glad I listened into this.
All right, so like I said, thank you for having this podcast, because if I knew, even though I did have a community of third culture kids, because it was a silent struggle, if I knew there was other people, and if I could have tuned in to like these kind of podcasters, it would have made life so much easier. So thank you for starting this. I think it's great. And even if it does send a nice message to one person, that would be great.
Well, it's you guys that keep it interesting. Let's keep spreading this message together.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. It really is a pleasure.
And it's a pleasure, as always, wherever you are in the world, to have you joining me for this conversation. Given that you've listened through to this point, I take that it was as interesting for you as it was for me to have that conversation. And I really hope that you managed to take some relevant and inspiring content from it. Again, my aim of the show is to spotlight these lives and experiences of the guests so that you can see whether you can relate and apply some of their lessons and perspectives to your own situation. If you're able to connect with something that was discussed, then feel free and please do share the episode with someone who can resonate. Tag them on Instagram as well. The podcast page can be found at The Journey Onwards Podcast, and you can follow the link in description to get you there. People ask me what my end goal is for the podcast. Along with connecting deeper with all of the interesting people in my life, I'm also building out a platform where each of you can showcase your expertise and passions from the lens of being a third culture individual. If you're interested to be a part of this growing tribe, then head over to podcast.thejourneyonwards.com/tribe, leave me your email address, and I'll be in touch with more details. As always, I am super grateful for the feedback that you sent to me, as well as your reviews on Apple Podcasts. When these goes up, it increases the chance that these great conversations get in front of more people. I'll be back next week for another episode, so until then, I really hope your next week is even better than the last.